Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We will have Corey Curtis coming up at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit from News 2. Looking forward to that. We'll catch up with Tennessee football, Joe Rex Road's impressions from the Orange and White game coming up at 7:30 as he was there in Neyland Stadium over the weekend. A Rob rant coming up at 7:45. So a lot to get to on the program here today. Joe, I saw this report over the weekend relating to Kevin Byard, and Jeremy Fowler, the ESPN insider, went on SportsCenter on Saturday morning. Obviously, Buda Baker, it came out, requesting a trade from Arizona over the weekend. So Jeremy Fowler was on talking about that, and in the middle of doing that, he brought up Kevin Byard. And here's what Jeremy Fowler had to say on ESPN. Quote, "This is one I'm watching. We talked about Buda Baker earlier as being available high-end safety. This is another one where he's not necessarily available via trade, that he's being shopped, but something could give with his contract. He's due almost $14 million next year. The Titans have been in clear reset mode where they're looking at veterans to potentially shed salary from. This is a player who wants to retire in Tennessee, wants to stay there, but he believes he's been playing at a high level for years, which he has been, and his play hasn't dropped off, so he's not eager to take any sort of pay cut. Something has to give, and I do think at the end of the day, he would be open to a trade if the Titans wanted to explore it." Here's what Jeremy Fowler had to say on SportsCenter on Saturday morning. So, you know, obviously, he went through all kind of like the checklist there of the pay cut thing, which we've talked about with Kevin Byard. Obviously, he wants to remain in Tennessee, but did say, you know, if something had to give, he thinks that Kevin Byard would be open to a trade if the Titans wanted to explore it. What do you make of those comments from Jeremy Fowler Saturday morning on SportsCenter on ESPN?
Well, I take the comments as straight from Byard's agent to Jeremy Fowler's lips there.
Yep.
To the viewers. So it goes back to the pay cut idea, which of course kind of seems like it's been buried, but maybe not. Hey, Monty Austinfort was here. Maybe they just, how about Buda Baker for Kevin Byard straight up? How about that?
Maybe so. Could be a lot of interesting trades with Arizona and Tennessee on the horizon.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I mean, it's clearly, look, whether, and I know, and like we like to joke on Jared, you know, Rocky Road plus Blue Moon, very nice combination. But, you know, clearly, the ask or the suggestion or just bringing up the idea of a pay cut is something that, you know, wasn't greeted with a lot of enthusiasm. And look, I don't blame Byard at all.
No.
Byard is still playing at the high level. I mean, that's an agent talking, but you know what? It's not inaccurate. Byard is playing at a high level and he understands the business side of this. And I'm sure the position the Titans are in, and they're trying to find more flexibility because the cap is real. But I don't blame him for being like, no, thanks. And so whether it's, you know, so whether he actually said, you know, what will release me or whatever, ask for his release, or just sort of, you know, sort of this sounds more like, okay, well then you guys can trade me, you know, basically, no, I'm not taking the pay cut. So I guess the next question is then back on the Titans. Do they view that as a necessity? You know, does the plan hinge on that? I kind of thought it was maybe a moot point at this point, but if this stuff is surfacing again, perhaps not.
Well, and obviously, like you said, this has not been something that Kevin Byard has particularly enjoyed based on the reporting around this. And I agree with you. When I heard those comments for Jeremy Fowler, my first thought was, well, that sounds like it came directly from Kevin Byard's agent on that front. So obviously this is not something that Kevin Byard wants to do. And this is not something unique to Kevin Byard. I mean, we talked about this when this news first came out. How many players do you know around the league that are like, yeah, sign me up for a pay cut. That sounds great. Let's do that. So it's not surprising. I don't blame Kevin Byard on that front. But now to your point, what do the Titans do with this information? If Kevin Byard is not going to take a pay cut and he has no interest in doing that, what does that mean for the way that you view Kevin Byard? Because I think you and I would both agree, when you start to talk about leaders of the team, certainly leaders of the defense, his name comes up, and then Jeffrey Simmons' name comes up on the defensive side of the ball. But beyond the leadership part of it, which I think is really important, he's also been a very good player and still is a very good player for the Tennessee Titans. So, like, is saving that money worth you losing another good player on your roster at this stage of where they're at right now? Like, are you willing to take it that far if you're the Titans where you would seriously consider trading Kevin Byard? That's now the question for them.
Yeah, look, and if he's moved, then I mean, it's not like all of a sudden a safety leaves and just everything. It's like a house of cards and it collapses. But it's harder for me to see this team being the competitive path, you know, that we've talked about for next year. You know, look, I mean, they have perilously little safety depth behind Byard and Hooker, who was hurt a lot of last year. Byard, again, one of the many things about him, playing at a high level, yes, leader on the team, no doubt. I mean, it's him. I think Byard and Simmons are the two most important voices on the defense. Also, the dude never remotely hurt, never a scratch. He's been running around hitting people for years. So, and there's a lot of value in that. But, yeah, like if it actually came to that, and I kind of look at this kind of like the agent wants to get it out there and a little bit of a, you know, hey, well, you know, if you're going to keep pushing this, you know, then, you know it, a little bit of public pressure on the Titans, you know, to sort of back off is what it feels like. But if they actually did make a move, it actually got to the point where they felt compelled to make a move, then, yeah, I mean, to me, that's more of a rebuilding team than a competitive team next year.
Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Doug, who wants to weigh in. Doug, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good.
Good.
Good. I just don't understand how the Titans got in this situation. They don't have a lot of, you know, I know they have Derrick Henry, and now they're paying Jeffrey, but they don't have a lot of superstars. So how did they get in such a bad salary cap situation?
Yep, thanks for the call. Well, I mean, it's part of those, you know, kicking the can down the road, Joe, as we said. You know, when you ask guys to, you know, restructure their deals and you're going for it now in a window to win, this is what happens. I'm looking at overthecap.com right now, and it's got the Titans at a little bit more than $11 million in cap space right now. Again, this from overthecap.com. But, you know, to Doug's question there, Joe, this is kind of what we talked about with the salary cap. If you push it down the road long enough, eventually you got to pay the piper. Look, they've shed some salary. I mean, they've done some things so far this offseason that have shed some salary. Taylor Lewan's gone, but, you know, they still, you know, you take a look at the cap space available, and the Titans are right around the middle of the pack of the league, according to overthecap.com, of where they land right now salary cap-wise.
Right, and I forget what it would have been before, but it was more than this for sure. I mean, Jeffrey Simmons' new deal actually drops his cap number this year. He's at 6.35.
Yep.
But you're exactly right. I mean, the Julio deal and that time frame, there was some can kicking. Some people think you can just do that and you're fine and forever and ever. No, I mean, you have to have challenges, and you do have to be under the cap in the NFL. It is a lot easier than in the NHL, but it is not non-existent. And so some of that has put them in this situation. You know, Tannehill's cap this year, 36.6, which is a big number.
It is.
I mean, it's almost more than – almost more than double anybody else. Byard's at 19 as the next highest, so – so, yeah, it's, you know, look, I mean, not many teams out there have a $16.4 million cap hit for the running back. The Titans do. Should the Titans? I mean, I'd say they're in a little different situation at that position than almost every other team in the league. So, but that's another part of this as well.
Let's go back to our 102.5 The Game phone line and welcome in Weston here on the program. Weston, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Good morning, guys. Interesting that Kevin Byard is still on this idea of possibly requesting a trade, but here's my thoughts on this is, could this be the way the Titans go and still be able to move up, draft the quarterback they want, but then turn around and trade Kevin Byard for a later first-round pick in this year's draft? And is that possibly still on the table?
Thanks for the call, Weston. I mean, I would be – Kevin Byard's not getting a first-round pick back. It's just
– No.
Not, first off, the money that comes with Kevin Byard, but secondly, the position, right?
The position, the age, the money, it's you're not even close to a first-round pick. It's just how this – and I feel like this is a pretty common – I feel like that in a lot of cases, like there's a lot of general public inflation of what a good player in this league would bring in terms of picks. In this league especially, age is so devalued relative to cheap young players coming in from the draft.
Right.
Like like what would Byard get? Byard would get – I mean, maybe he could get a third – Maybe.
Yeah.
So now, could Byard be part of some package to, you know, to go move up? Anthony Richardson, I think, is visiting today, right?
Yes.
What if they absolutely knocks everybody's socks out? They're like, yeah, this has got to be the guy. Like you said, I mean, that'd be really interesting. I guess, you know, Cardinals move Buda Baker somewhere else, Byard's the replacement, along with a bunch of other stuff that comes their way, and the Titans move up to three. How about that?
Well, Cam Wolf, like you said, friend of the show, Cameron Wolf, put it out there this morning. Anthony Richardson got into Nashville last night for the Titans' visit today. An important visit, Tennessee team to watch as the quarterback landing spot. Would they trade up for their guy? Richardson has visited Vegas, Carolina, and Indy so far, and Anthony Richardson visiting with the Tennessee Titans today. So, we talked about the Will Levis visit last week, Anthony Richardson visiting the Titans today, and here we are back again at the quarterback carousel. But, Vegas, Carolina, Indy already taking a look at Anthony Richardson so far with their visits, and now he's in here in Nashville today with the Titans. And I would imagine, based on the reporting around Anthony Richardson to this point, that it will be very impressive. The workouts will be impressive. The interviews apparently have gone well, and then it just comes down to what exactly the Titans think of that quarterback.
You know, I know Vrabel likes to, get in a three-point stance and smash into players a little bit.
He does.
He might want to be careful today, man.
At least stretch a little bit, you know.
Richardson might throw him through a wall.
He might.
Yeah, at least stretch.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll continue the conversation on the Titans and a former Titan who ends up where apparently all former Titans end up now as well over the weekend. We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Join me from 10 a.m. to noon this Saturday for another Kubota field event at the Coleman Tractor in White House for their biggest sales event of the year. You can demo Kubota tractors, zero-turn mowers, and more. That's Coleman Tractor of White House, located at 3613 Highway 31 West this Saturday. Looking forward to seeing you there. Coming up this Saturday, we are streaming live here on Robbie and Rex Road on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 102.5 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Taking your thoughts, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Lance on the text line says, the Byard situation is why players/teams should never restructure their contracts. This is from Lance on the text line. The players don't really mind. I mean, they just get more money up front at that point. But the team, while you're maybe saving cap space to start, eventually the cap space stretches out, and that's how you end up with a safety with a $19 million cap hit this year, Joe Rexroot.
And I mean, think about if we're, because I know.
Joe, we lost your microphone.
Microphone.
Gosh darn it. How's that?
Much better.
There's that rich, delicious microphone voice. Sorry. Yeah, this is also a good, of course, people are always, when we have these discussions, get on the text line and joke about the cap being real or fake. I mean, let me ask you this with Byard. Do you think the Titans are asking for a pay cut because they don't believe in him as a player, or they just don't think he should be paid this money? Or do you think it's related to the freaking cap? I mean, here's another great example. If anyone would want to pay attention out there and stop saying stupid things, this is absolutely, purely 100% a cap situation and nothing else. And anybody arguing otherwise is an idiot. End of rant.
A mini Rex rant today here on the program. Joe, Bud Dupree signing a one-year deal with the Atlanta Falcons. So I guess we probably should have seen that one coming. If you play for the Titans really for any stretch of time, the odds of you ending up in Atlanta over the course of the last couple of years are pretty high. But Bud Dupree, there were some rumors out there that he could end up back in Pittsburgh and that there were conversations between he and the Steelers going on. And obviously those did not materialize, but he is with Atlanta on a one-year deal. Dupree at 30 years old, played 430 snaps last year for the Titans. We know about the injuries that Bud Dupree had here with Tennessee, and now he has landed with the Atlanta Falcons. So the interesting offseason of the Falcons continues, and they have Bud Dupree in the fold down there.
See, now here's an example of, like, if you were the Titan, it's a one-year, did you say five or six?
I've not seen the number. Just says one-year deal.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw a number that I believe it was $5 million. I'll confirm that. It's either $5 or $6 million. If you're the Titans, you'd love that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're the Titans, you're like, yes, I would love to have Bud Dupree on a one-year $5 million or $6 million deal. That's perfect. That's exactly what he should get paid. And there you go. The Titans would be all set. They'd have Bud Dupree at what he should be making, you know? So, I mean, Arthur Smith, though, man, like anybody who's ever set foot in Nashville, I mean, is he going to, like, get Kid Rock and his team? God, I hope so. Please, someone take Kid Rock away from the state.
Well, is Pete someone. Rose available now?
Man, Arthur Smith loves the Nashvillians, baby. Pete Rose, motivational speaker. Yeah. Pete, don't get Pete Rose, Calvin Ridley together. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, no. Boy. They could really just keep Pete He's Rose away from Jacksonville at all costs. just beautiful.
Parlays galore.
But Bud Dupree signing with the Falcons. And, you know, we brought this up last week, and there was, you know, there's chatter out there. I was reading off the ESPN report of the Titans, and they were trying to determine whether or not, you know, the Titans could be a viable candidate to move up to number three to take a quarterback. And I think it was Matt Miller on ESPN last week said, you know, there's thought that they could just stay at 11 and take an edge rusher. And my first thought was, edge rusher? Okay. Well, you got offensive linemen that you need. You got wide receivers that you need. But edge rusher, we've talked about. You've got Arden Key coming in. You've got Rashad Weaver as a part of your depth. Harold Landry coming off the ACL. And I do wonder, like, do the Titans look at that position and say, yep, we still need some help there. And the draft is going to be the place that they do that. And, you know, obviously, I mean, by the time they pick, Will Anderson's going to be gone. You know, could Tyree Wilson slide down? He could be gone. You love you some Nolan Smith out of Georgia. We had an impressive combine. There's Luke Van Ness from Iowa. I tell you what, a guy that I really like that I'm interested to see where he ends up going. I watched a lot of BJ Ojulari last year at LSU, and I think he's pretty darn good. So I'm interested to see where he goes. But there's a lot of different guys. Keon White visited with the Titans last week out of Georgia Tech. So how likely is it that they could go edge rusher? And I guess how deep, if you're the Titans, as you look at this draft, we've talked about receiver and maybe being able to find some receivers in the second or third round that could come in and help you immediately. Like, do you view edge rusher the same way, or do you feel like if you're the Titans, you need to go get edge rusher a little bit higher in order to get, you know, an impact guy that could come in and help you immediately?
Yeah, look, I don't think you can have too many good edge rushers at all. And you look at their situation, you know, Landry, like, set off the ACL, so you know, that's, but you still, you're counting on him long term. You're counting on him to fulfill that contract and still be a really good player for the next few years. Arden Key could be, you know, could be a short term thing. Rashad Weaver is a good rotational guy. But even though he doesn't exactly play that position, I mean, Denico Autry's time isn't too long here. I mean, it may just be the end of this contract this year, and that's it, right? So, I mean, he's been such a huge part of the pass rush. Look, I think it's the big board. And if the big board says Tyree Wilson falls, and you're sitting there and you got Tyree Wilson or Paris Johnson Jr., I mean, I still – if your big board says Tyree Wilson is ahead of Paris Johnson, then I think you go that way. You know, I think you stay true to that, because if you can get the higher impact and just a better player at the position that still is one of need, maybe not of the most pressing need, but you can't have too many good pass rushers in this league. It makes up for so much other stuff on defense, and most, you know, as much as we talk about quarterbacks, you don't see too many teams that get far in the postseason in the NFL that don't have fierce pass rushes.
What do you think of Byron Young? I mean, we've talked a lot about Tennessee players, and we've kind of honed in on either Hendon Hooker or the two wide receivers in Hyatt and Tillman. What do you think Byron Young will be at the next level?
I think he's a really interesting and I think promising prospect when you consider really how little football he's played compared to a lot of guys and the path to get here. I think you saw definite improvement from 2021 to 2022 with him. And yeah, I mean, I think he's at least like an intriguing situational pass rusher. Is he like about a third rounder? Probably.
That's where most people have him going, is in the third round.
Yeah, no, I like Byron Young. And again, I think Byron Young is the kind of guy that, like, yeah, if Vrabel, and I don't know if the Titans, talk to him or not, but like Vrabel would like that guy instantly. You know, Carthon, he's a very likable guy. Again, you go through all that he went through to get here, including like basically like a fake prep school. He was apparently a very good Dollar General employee. But he's a guy who has some humility and some real world experience. And again, like, I think there's still a learning curve there that tells you that he's not at his ceiling right now.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Coming up next, we'll catch up with Joe Rexroad and his thoughts on the orange and white game for Tennessee over the weekend at Neyland Stadium. Good crowd at Neyland Stadium over the weekend. What did Joe learn specifically about the quarterbacks over the weekend? We will get into all that coming up next. Make sure you tune into Nashville's best NFL draft coverage on 102.5, 106.3 The Game for the first three rounds coming up on Thursday, April 27th and Friday, April 28th. Coverage presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, thenewcumberland.com, Smoky Mountain Tops, Parman Energy, and B&B Flooring. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. I got some tickets to give away, a pair of tickets to see Whiskey Myers at Ascend Amphitheater coming up on May the 6th. Be caller number 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see Whiskey Myers at Ascend Amphitheater on May 6th, 615-737-1025. 1025. Joe, you were there live and in person at Neyland Stadium on Saturday for the orange and white game with Tennessee. Obviously, a lot of intrigue at the quarterback position heading into that game. It's been an interesting spring football season for Tennessee. They're coming off their best season in about 20 years last season, and you've got moving on from Hendon Hooker, Joe Milton taking over as the starting quarterback. You got Nico coming in as a five-star prospect. There's lots of excitement. By the way, they continue to recruit well, so things continuing to go very well for Josh Heupel on the recruiting front throughout spring football as well. As we know, Joe, the spring football game leaves us with so much information that actually translates over to the regular season coming up in the fall. So we all love spring football here on the program. But what were some of your takeaways from the orange and white game on Saturday at Neyland Stadium?
Yeah, it's tough. It's a tough scene. But I will give Josh Heupel a ton of credit because they went running clock in the second half, and they got done with that sucker in less than 2 hours. I was darn near cheering in the press box.
Yes, sir.
So kudos to Heupel. Good job. And, of course, Gaston Moore now is in the quarterback competition. He was the best quarterback Saturday. So, yep. No, but I will say if there's really one takeaway, because, like, Milton, he's missing his top four receivers and top two running backs. So start there. And Heupel said three of the receivers would have played if it was an actual game, but you're not messing around with anything. I will say that I was worried about it, I guess, wondering about it. And now I think certainly by design, the Vols, the defenses, and by the way, it's orange and white, but the quarterbacks just switch sides and stuff. So, but there was a lot of blitzing, but the protection was not great. So that is one thing I look at is like, how much of a step down are they going to have with the offensive line? How much of a learning curve? You know, obviously, they lost their two starting tackles. Crawford, you know, is back also, and he split time with Mincy. But, you know, Darnell Wright's a huge loss. How much are they going to miss those guys? Do they have the adequate replacements? So that's one thing. There's some young guys who I thought looked good. Cameron Seldon is a very intriguing young player who looked good at running back, who, you know, came in as a receiver. But I think my main takeaway is, like, Nico is going to be good, man. I know it's a spring game, but first time I really had a chance to watch him, you know, play football other than, like, film of him in high school, which just doesn't say much. He is he has got a really nice-looking, you know, throwing motion, quick release, and just, you know, just like kind of a smooth delivery. But also really fast and really good at escaping initial rush. And that's one area where he right now is flat out better than Joe Milton. And that's the one – I think my biggest knock on Joe Milton is actually not the overthrows. It's he's not great at evading rush. Now, he can – you know, when he gets trucking, you know, he's a wagon, right?
Yep.
But he's like in the pocket, he's kind of a sitting duck. And Hooker, of course, was very good at eluding. And Nico, I think, will be even better. Nico as a runner, you can see it. And, you know, he had the throw of the day too. I thought that he looked better running the tempo than I expected. Because obviously that's a huge part of this offense is being able to have the operationally go, like maximize that speed. Milton's very good at that. There's a big difference between those two in that way. One of several reasons Milton is going to start and Nico will be his backup. But when Nico puts on 15 pounds or so, 10, 12, 15 pounds in the offseason, which he badly needs, he could be ready to be pretty good in 2024.
Well, they put out a video on the Vol football Twitter account, and you know, if you're watching it, you saw it live, but I think it was a 3rd and 7 and he just rolls to the right, and it's basically a 25-yard throw on the run on the right sideline there, and it's just right over the shoulder, and you're like, geez, what a throw. You know, that's a great throw for an NFL quarterback right there, much less a freshman that's never played college football before at the in a spring game. It was pretty impressive stuff from Nico.
Yeah, no, that was easily the in an otherwise completely dead press box of people wishing they were anywhere else. That was like, whoa, that was one of those throws. And he had some other ones. I mean, he had some good moments. You know, he had a really good drive, got him to like the 7, and he had a really good scramble in there. He had a couple sharp passes. You're like, okay, you get into a rhythm, you can see it. Then first and goal, he tried to throw a pick. I mean, it must have been a miscommunication on the route. And then, like, they blitzed on third down, and he did the, oh, no, run left and run right, and Fran Tarkenton, and, you know, it's like a 10-yard sack. So, like, you know, he looks like a freshman at times too. But there's no doubt the problem's there. And just even talking to him after the game, I mean, he's got a good head on his shoulders, and look, he's looking at this like this is a learning year. You never know what might happen. I mean, Milton could falter. They could lose. It could get to the point at some point that Nico's the starter. But if Nico's the starter next year at any point, that's bad news for the season. That's just what, you know, that's the reality of it. He, you know, the Vols are counting on Joe Milton to start and be really good. And I think they have a chance to have another 10-win season.
Well, the thing is, I think the skill positions around Milton, so I'm looking at, you know, obviously wide receiver where you've got Squirrel White, you've got Ramel Keaton, you've got Rue McCoy coming back, you know, you got the transfer from Oregon coming in. I like the running back position. I think at running back they got a chance to be real good. I mean, the one question I have, you know, beyond Milton on the offensive side is a big one, is the offensive line. What exactly is that going to look like? You brought that up earlier. But, I mean, other than that, I look at their offense, and I know they lost Tillman and Hyatt, and it's not like you just find Tillman and Hyatt replacements anywhere. I still think their receiving core is pretty darn good, and I think their running back position is really good. And I think the skill positions around Milton have a chance to be very good for Tennessee next year. They just have to be able to block on that side of the ball.
Right, right. And they got some promising tight ends, too. You know, Jacob Warren is back, yep. So – you know, they will miss Princeton Fant, you know, goal line running back, Princeton Fant. But they, you know, I agree. It's and none of those guys play. McCoy, Dante and Squirrel White, not Dante, with Dante Thornton.
Yeah.
What am I talking about? And Ramel Squirrel White and then all and Keaton, none of those guys played. And I mean McCoy, I think has a chance to be a pro. I mean Squirrel White could be like the breakout star next year.
Yeah.
And based on how he has looked this spring, you know, it's and look, you look at like the schedule next year, and certainly they go to the Swamp, but I mean they should go win that game. You know, so I think you know you have Virginia and Austin Peay to start. Virginia, of course, is here in Nashville. Then you have that game. You have UTSA, which actually is a pretty good team coming into Neyland Stadium. Then South Carolina. Like you get to ease into the really tough games next year. So that's where the offensive line needs to have that time to gel. They do have some young players who could potentially emerge there. I mean, look, they've got some recruiting class. And look, I do think I mean, the defense beat the offense. And so for the most part, I think with the Vols, the inclination is to just think, wow, what's wrong with the offense? Or they're out of sync or, you know, what's going on there? Look, I mean, I think the defense could be better this year. I really like Danico Slaughter. I actually think he's going to be a good player for the Vols. And they have a bunch of guys out there. Like the competition should create better play there. And I really think their pass rush could be good. Even, you know, even losing Byron Young, I think that they got a chance to, they got some young pass rushers who I think are really promising. So, you know, overall, again, go through their schedule. I don't want to say 10-2 or anything less than 10-2 is a disappointment, but I think there's definitely a path to it.
Well, let's be honest. The non-conference schedule is kind of a joke for Tennessee next year. I mean, you've got the Virginia game, and that's here in Nashville. But, I mean, other than that, you've got Austin Peay, UTSA, like you said, I guess renewing the rivalry with UConn, taking it to the gridiron rather than the basketball court next year. That's probably going to go well for Tennessee. But, I mean, the SEC schedule, you get things started with my best friend Shane Beamer coming into Neyland Stadium, Texas A&M, Jimbo, what exactly are they going to be next year? I have no idea. You know, your usual suspects in Alabama and Georgia. Kentucky loses Will Levis, so what are they going to be? Like, I can see a path to 9-10 wins if things go well for Tennessee next year, and maybe putting yourself in a position where you're in there with a Georgia or with an Alabama in the game. I mean, Alabama lost Bryce Young. What are they going to be? That game is on the road next year. But bottom line is, like, this idea that Tennessee could take a major step back, I guess I could see it happening if Milton falters. But if he's – like, if Joe Milton is good, and I'm not saying he has to be Hendon Hooker good, but if he's good, I think there's enough talent on this team where they could be right in there in the mix for 9 or 10 wins next year, just based on the schedule.
Yeah, and then, you know, again, the idea is – you know, the idea is, you know, there's some, you know, some promising young players, you know, on this roster, you know, that Nico has – a really good team around him. And again, in 2024 now, you've got a much expanded opportunity to get into the playoff as well, you know?
Yep.
And he's ready in that second year after a year sitting, just like Bryce Young had, just like CJ Stroud had, just like ideally you have in a big time program where you have big time quarterbacks, you have that year to, you know, to develop and not have that pressure on you right away. So, but that's, you know, I mean, that's Joe Milton has got to play. And I still think the Vols certainly could get into the portal. I know David Ubbin's been a big proponent of that. He's like, you can't just go into the season. You know, with Milton, there's still questions. Will he be consistent? Will he be good enough? There's going to be some toss-up games in here. I mean, Kentucky's going to want revenge. Alabama, I mean, A&M is still very talented. You know, is he going to be good enough? Do you want to have it all on Nico? Like it's either Joe or Nico, or is there could you find a veteran out there, you know, who could be a little bit of a stopgap if needed? But I will say Gaston Moore,
he looked good.
The guy was good. I mean, he's a UCF transfer, but hey man, he's been like in this offense for a while, you know? And man, it's three, you know, threes versus threes. So you got to keep that in mind, but he looked good running it, and he can make the throws.
scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you that spring football is over with?
Oh, I mean, yeah, 11. I mean, the best spring games by far are the March spring games, but you're covering a basketball team that's still in the tournament.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like that's the dream scenario. So, yeah, it's interesting, too, that like the SEC, and this is a change, but I don't think they really broadcast any of these spring games, did they? I know they didn't do the Tennessee one or the Vanderbilt one.
I think they're available on like ESPN Plus or something like that, but yeah.
Yeah, so I guess trying to lean in more on the streaming, but yeah, no, we can all agree that spring football is crap, right? I mean, people are mad at me on the text line about Kid Rock, who's a freaking idiot. But we can all agree that spring football sucks, right?
I mean, they had almost 60,000 people there. A lot of people at Neyland Stadium over the weekend for practice.
But it was a nice, yeah, it was a nice day to chill out. It was.
Sit in the sun, we can agree.
$5.
Spring football, not the time or place.
Anytime I get to see Joe Milton throw a football, I'm cool with it. I don't care if it's summer, fall, spring, winter. I'm here for it every time. Just saying.
You'll get to see it a lot coming up.
We will. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it's time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every morning at 745. That is next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now
on Robbie and Rex Road.
We're vibing, Robbie.
Hey, Robbie. Still vibing, kid?
Still vibing, bud.
We're vibing, Robbie. Vibing. 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 Vibing.
We're vibing, Robbie.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. You can check it out every Monday morning. You can check it out every morning at 7:45. Either the Rob Rant, the Rex Rant, the Red Rant, one of us will be ranting about something every morning at 7:45. And Joe, mine is something that I think will be familiar to Nashville Predators fans, particularly this time of year once the playoffs get rolling. So look, first off, full disclaimer, I love the Stanley Cup playoffs. They begin today. I think it's the greatest playoffs in all of sports. It's the hardest trophy to win in all the sports. And I know it's a little less exciting this year around here because the Predators aren't in it, but I am going to enjoy very much watching the Stanley Cup playoffs nonetheless. So I'm very excited that things are getting rolling tonight in the playoffs, and I'm very interested to see how things go here. But I feel like I could have this every year, this specific rant, and I'm looking at the schedule right now, and I can have it again. The central time zone just gets so screwed in the playoffs every single year, and yet we have another example of this again. Minnesota and Dallas play today, right? So they got four games today. New York taking on Carolina at 6 o'clock. Florida and Boston at 6:30. You got L.A. and Edmonton in the nightcap tonight at 9 o'clock. That makes sense. I mean, L.A. and Edmonton both out west, whatever. That makes sense. Minnesota and Dallas are playing tonight at 8:30, which if you've ever been to a playoff game, you know it's not really 8:30. It's like 8:45 when the puck drops tonight in the Central time zone. They're playing tonight in Game 1 at 8:30, Wednesday in Game 2 at 8:30, and Friday in Game 3 at 8:30. All late starts in the Central time zone. Now, look, the Friday one's a little bit different because obviously the weekend is coming up, and that one doesn't really bother me all that much. It just kind of is what it is. But I ask this question every year, and it just boggles my mind exactly what the NHL is trying to accomplish here with the 8:30 start with the Central Division teams. So if you've got, you know, your casual, well, let me put it to you this way, your diehard Minnesota Wild fan and your diehard Dallas Stars fan, they'll be up tonight, they'll watch, and you'll get those eyeballs on your product or in the seats at your game, no question about it. But the playoffs, as we know around here, based on the run the Predators made a few years ago, are a very good opportunity to draw in the casual fan. If you're the NHL, you have to be realistic and recognize that there are a lot of people that don't really watch your season until the playoffs start. And that's just the way it is. And then they buy into their local team and they get invested come playoff time. And if you give them reasons not to watch, they're going to take those reasons not to watch. And one of those reasons is waiting till 8:45 to drop the puck on a game night and a local start where kids are going to school the next morning, people got to go to work the next morning. I think it's so stupid. And people are like, well, you're trying to space the playoff games out so people can watch all of them at the same time. It's like, well, you're playing at 6 o'clock and at 6:30 with the Islanders and Hurricanes game and then the Panthers-Bruins game. So you got two teams going on at the same – or two games going on at the same time then. You got the nightcap with L.A. and the Oilers. Why not just start Minnesota and Dallas at like 7:30? Heck, even 8. Like move it up 30 minutes to 8. It's not great, but it's better than 8:45 when the puck drop happens right now. It bothers me every single year that the NHL can't figure this out. I mean, even tonight on American TV, they're on different stations. Like ESPN and ESPN2 have the first one. And I realize that you want ESPN2 to have the second one with Minnesota and Dallas taking place after that. But there's got to be a better way that we could structure this where the central time zone every single year isn't just getting absolutely hosed in this situation. And like I said, first two games this week, both starting, the puck will drop around 8:45 for these Dallas-Minnesota games. And good luck if you're like a casual sports fan trying to buy in and get into the playoffs in Dallas or Minnesota when you're dropping the puck at 9 o'clock local time. It's just ridiculous that this happens every time.
I mean, if you're a ticket holder with kids, they're going to get to bed, and they're going to get to bed about 1 a.m. on a school night.
And that's if the game ends in regulation.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, it's absurd. Yeah, and why it is so hard to understand if you, like you said, you have two games like that that are basically side by side. Why not stagger this like the NCAA tournament does? The first 2 days of the NCAA tournament, they kind of make it so that you're going to get to watch this finish and now this finish. I mean 7 o'clock, 7:30. Be perfect. Be fine. But instead, they have the two right together, and then they have the big gap. Why? Like there needs to be – I'd love to hear the explanation for this. Maybe there is one.
Well, it's TV,
like
right?
Like you said. Right, but I mean – but from a TV perspective, take away the inconvenience of the fans and the disrespect, basically, to the fans. Like, just from a TV perspective, what's the explanation of having two together and then a big gap as opposed to doing the stagger thing – that the TV executives who do the NCAA tournament have figured out.
Yeah, I mean it's crazy to me. And again, like you take a look at tomorrow, like even tomorrow, right? When the other series gets started, I mean Vegas and Winnipeg starts at 8:30, and at least that one's in Vegas, who is in a different time zone than we're in right now. So that helps that one a little bit. But, like, even Colorado. Like, Colorado and the Kraken don't play tomorrow night until 9 o'clock. That's 8 o'clock Colorado time. Like, it's still late for Colorado out there. It's just – it's a really weird setup that they have. And I get it. There's not a perfect solution. Like, the way that they've got it staggered right now, ideally, the Islanders-Hurricanes game ends and it leads right into Minnesota and Dallas on ESPN2. Ideally, that's what happens. But how many times have we seen the Stanley Cup playoffs where – you know, the Islanders-Hurricanes game will go into three overtimes, and Minnesota and Dallas is starting on a different channel somewhere else anyway. So don't tell me you can't start the game earlier and put it on a different channel. It's just ridiculous to me.
And again, it's like there's the TV thing, and then I feel like there is like this inability to grasp the bigger picture that you mentioned, you know, which is, you know, you just have – if you're going to press someone – and it's like, I can't stay up this late for this. You know, there's a casual fan that, you know, you're trying to capture that audience this time of year. I mean, the Preds absolutely built more. They added on to their fan base 6 years ago, right?
Significantly,
I think they added on to it and captured some people who stuck with them. And in fact, now that I think about it, did they have these issues at all back then?
Oh, yeah.
With the timing? Yeah. Yeah, like the Chicago series at home, right? Those are like late starts, weren't they?
Oh, yeah. I remember the year before in 2016 when they played San Jose, they had like two of those starts at 8:30. And then, of course, a couple of them went into overtime. So you're walking out of the building at like 2:45. That was fun.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and the thing, at least with that, it's like, okay, well, that's a West Coast team you're playing. So, like, you could sort of justify it on that side of it.
Right.
You know? But if you have two teams in the Central, yeah, why? Who wants that? Nobody wants that.
Nobody wants it. And like I said, this is a big time of year. Like, I've never really met somebody who watches a Stanley Cup playoff game and is like, oh man, that sucked. That was boring. Don't want to do that. But you gotta give them a reason to watch. Like, you gotta make sure that, you know, you're doing all you can on your part to bring in the casual viewer. So this bothers me every year. It bothered me again when I saw the schedule come out this week for the Minnesota-Dallas series. You know, even me, like tonight, I mean, I'm about as big of a hockey fan as it gets. I'm going to stay up as long as I can to watch it, but I'm not staying up the whole time watching a Minnesota-Dallas game tonight when it starts at 8:45 when we got to be up and do the morning show the next morning. It's just not happening. Put it at 7:30, I'd be better.
I know. That's the thing is, like, tonight, I mean, I'm really excited, like, to watch the Oilers.
Yeah.
And also, you got Warriors-Kings, so it's like, oh, man.
That one's tough. To 9 p.m.er.
Trying to do a nap and then do it? I don't know, man. It's tough decisions today.
Are Preds fans rooting for the Oilers? That's my other question of the day. Like, are you going Ekholm and McDavid all the way? What are we doing?
They should be, right?
I think
like,
so.
It's not like Ekholm left them. He got traded.
Yeah. That's who I think. I mean, Janot's hurt right now in Tampa, so he's not playing right now. It's got to be Ekholm, right?
I think so.
615-737-1025. This has been the Rob Rant. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get his thoughts on the Preds, the end of their season, get his thoughts on the Titans leading into the draft as well. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.